Hello and welcome once again, Quality Timers. It's your host, Eric Woodworth. And boy, do we have an epic battle ahead of us. There's been a lot of great mashups in history, both cinematic and in the real world. You got your Ollie and Frasier. You got your Magic versus Bird. Your King Kong versus Godzilla. Your Backstreet Boys versus the NSYNC. But tonight might be the most epic of them all. It's a good episode. I'm very excited about it. By the way, the movie we're going over tonight is also available on the Netflix. If you'd like to go ahead and check that out and refresh your memory on this one. We have a special guest in Mr. Eric Navarro of The Hard Times. Very, very funny publication. You should check them out. He was a great guest. Real quick, whatever player you're listening to us on, drop us a 5-star rating. We do read them. We love all your comments. Thank you so much for your support. Now get ready. Get strapped in. Turn the volume up to 11 for Jason versus Freddy.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Kind of droops on one side like the Toxic Avengers. So, by the way, I have partied with the original Jason. So,
don't give it all away. Welcome back to Quality Time, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again.
Hello,
I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth, and I'm joined by none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, buddy?
All righty.
No voice tonight? This is it?
No.
This is the most awake I've seen you in forever.
This is another one of those just not up to par kind of episodes. So.
Is it the selection or you're just feeling off your
just
game?
Just feeling horrible.
You feel off your game.
Absolutely
a little bit.
Absolutely horrible.
Okay.
So.
Have you been using your CPAP mask?
Yeah, right.
Okay. We're coming fresh off of the CPAP.
I used the CPAP mask for, and I hooked it up to the exhaust.
I'm sorry I brought this up.
I hooked it up to the exhaust of my car and it still wasn't a perfect matching of the fittings. Mm-hmm. So.
And we have a guest this week. Oh my gosh. It's another than comedian, writer for The Hard Times magazine, which I think is only online, thehardtimes.net. Mr. Eric Navarro, thank you, Eric, for joining us here today.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm so glad that I didn't call you Krezaglinski, the other Eric I know.
Oh, okay. I'm so glad, too. That would have been a real problem.
Can I tell you something, Eric?
And I'm a really big fan of yours since you've been in the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes. Oh, thank you. My middle name is Dave.
Eric Navarro.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good... It's a good thing. Eric, now, you are the first person, as comedians that I know in the area, you're a local comedian in the mid-Atlantic. I think you're Pennsylvania or Delaware?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I moved up from, Maryland suburbs to central PA about 2 years ago.
Okay. Now, I'll be honest with you. You're the first person that I've talked to in the comedy scene because I get around. I do shows and stuff, and we've been on multiple shows together. You're the first person that ever actually came up to me and was like, "Hey, man, I'd like to be on Quality Time."
Really?
I have to go seek these people out then when we have guests. Well, but you were the first one. You're like, "I'd love to be on Quality Time." I was like, "Guess what? You're on."
Well, I appreciate that. I'm glad I reached out because I know that you were one of the first people I met in comedy, and I've actually heard that it was you, Simbazo, and Rob Mayer, who were three people I met at three different open mics when I was horrendous, just starting, no one wanted to talk to me. You all were each individually extremely nice and sweet, and now that I've met more comics at your level, I've heard that same thing about you and those two other guys as well. It's just you're all very inviting, especially you. And Eric, you gave me, when I was looking back, I was like, Eric has given me some of the best first big opportunities I've ever had. You're the reason the first time I ever headlined a bar show. You're the first time I ever got booked on anything that I didn't book myself on. And you've continued to put me on things and recommend me for things. So thank you very much.
Well, that's because I find you very funny and entertaining. So
not me. I'm completely jaded and I hate everybody.
I've done things for you that I haven't done for my own brother ever.
I like that. Yes, you have.
By the way, and after you asked Eric to be on Quality Time, 2 years later, here you are.
Yeah, baby. <It'll... laughs> So yeah, thank you. Welcome to the show, Jeremy. I realize that when this is airing, it's going to be after the event itself.
When you mean airing, you mean like an error in baseball,
as in when the Gen Pub can actually listen to this podcast. What I'm about to talking about is will already transpire.
Yes,
but. You asked me today if I could put you on the guest list for the Magoobies Joke House show. And listen, let's rewind. Let's rewind to the last time you were on the guest list for a Magoobies Joke House show.
I did
at the murder mystery.
I did kind of put on a show that time, So hence you're a little bit peckish about me showing up.
Eric, if you're not familiar, if our listeners aren't familiar, we had Jeremy, I had Jeremy as a guest at the Murder Mystery of Magoobies. And during a dance sequence, Jeremy came up from the audience, hidden on his personage somewhere. There was a horse mask that he put on, and he started dancing around with the cast on stage as if it was just part of the show. It kind of seamlessly blended, but we were all like, what in the god fuck is happening right now? And
I hate to say, somebody prompted me to the stage, and I'm guessing it was Robbie.
Oh, so you're saying Robbie Robinson was actually the person
I'm thinking he's the one that prompted me to the stage.
Oh, my God.
I don't know who it was because I can't remember,
this
but I'm going to guess it was him.
Because today when you asked me that your wife was interested in going, I was like, well, of course, I'll get you guys on the guest list. And then I texted you back, don't make me fucking regret this. So I sent that over. And by the way, I sent it over to Joe and Rob. Joe Robinson, without a hesitation, was like, of course he's in it. Of course he gets guest tickets immediately. So you've really enamored yourself with Joe Robinson. He's a little bit obsessed with you, I think.
Thanks. I need all the love in the world.
You do. Now, Jeremy, there's also, speaking of your love, Joe Robinson's love for you, you have done a song recently that
didn't make Quality Time.
I think the working title is called the Chris Restivo song.
That's one of the versions of the possible names.
Simple
love song, just like one with a three-part harmony.
I listened to, so Jeremy brings things to the show from time to time, and never has he ever said, I was like, well, why don't we just reveal it on the show? And he was like, I don't know, maybe you should listen to it. There was a fear of guilt.
I'm very sensitive to questionable things. So
I listened to this song.
Sounds like it.
I listened to this song with last week's guest, and I immediately came to the conclusion, this can't make the show. You understand? This can't. This can't make the show.
It's like the rule that you have for me. I could only say the N-word 20 times in each broadcast.
Yeah, 100%. But that didn't stop Jeremy from directly messaging it to Joe Robinson. And so since that
time...
Well,
he's a true fan, so I know he can handle it.
Since that time, Joe Robinson, I'm in a giant group text with Tommy and the rest of the guys from Die Laughing Productions. The second you sent it to him, he immediately forwarded it to the rest of us. He's like, sorry, I'm too busy. I'm too busy right now. I'm listening to this. And it's come up at least 3 or 4 more times. So now I'm starting to have second thoughts. Maybe it will see the light of day one day.
I like the lore of this. Even if it doesn't, the more you don't play it, And the more people are talking about it,
it's like, well, Eric, you got to hear it.
Oh, right? I did. It is a thing of beauty. It's it's a love song. It's more of a love making song.
And I'm a little bit scared because I just don't want to get killed by black people. And
which is ironic because
and I don't mean black. I mean gay people. So.
Yeah, but okay, gay that black makes more men. Sense.
Yes,
it's a very specific.
Wait. So your
subgroup.
Homophobia is also racially charged?
Yes.
I'm only homophobia.
I picture some like redneck who's just like, I ain't scared of no gay people unless the black or Mexican.
I'm not have no problem with homophobia.
Yeah, that's right.
I just don't like black homophobia. So.
Black homophobia is where I draw the line. No, that's
whenever
good.
I watch porn, I always block out the man in the picture so I don't have to see his dongus.
I like the word dongus that you chose for this.
Or the redneck who's so homophobic he only watches male to female transgender porn with a cisgendered female. That's what it is.
Yeah, I'm so straight. I only watch trans men that bang women because I need to see titties on both sides. Otherwise, it's gay. I like the idea. It's so gay to see a man fuck a woman that you have to have that man have tits.
I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say I'm fine with a dog having sex with a woman as long. It's not a black dog.
It's just like only golden retriever porn. That's the only thing I
no,
watch.
No, it's only German Shepherd. Good German blood. Keep the bloodline pure.
The Aryan dogs.
That's the bloodline they're concerned with. Oh, man. What's this podcast about?
I don't call him a good boy. I call him a rack boy.
Tonight on Quality Sodomy Time. So.
Quality Sodomy Time. Jeremy, do you have any news? Anything you'd like to bring up before we get into the corrections?
No.
Okay. No. Eric, you got any fun stories or quibbles you'd like to share with the show?
Is it worth going into the show I did, the last show I did for you, where a guy tried to fight me after my set?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to talk about that. Absolutely. So that guy was a fucking, set it up because I missed the start of this.
I will set up and you just take over whenever you feel. So basically you were hosting a show.
Yeah. At the Wits End Saloon. Shout outs attached to Mitigoobie's Joke House. Timonium, Maryland, mecca of comedy.
A beautiful, beautiful spot. I love it. It's one of the first places. It's the second open mic I ever did at the Wits End thing. Mm-hmm. And I never went anywhere. When I was only doing it once a week, that's where I went. It was my place. I loved it. So anyway, I'm watching. The lineup is stacked. So many good comics on it. Mm-hmm. And me, I'm just happy to be on the team. I don't care if I'm like the last. I'm not batting eighth. I'm still happy
to
be on the
team.
Don't
downplay yourself. So, you're very funny. Well, Eric Navarro,
my point
shout
is, thank you. My point is, so what happens is the place has a lot of people there, but there's also a couple of tables of people right up by the stage who are being very loud and not talking.
Yeah,
they're not paying attention to the show.
That, so this table, these chatty tables up front are clearly people who stayed over from happy hour. They're still there. The show was thrown upon them.
True.
If anything, they're seeing us almost as somebody who's ruining their night at this point. Like, they already see this as like, wait a minute, we have to be quiet.
We have a hard time article that straight up is, it's like local bar unaware they're about to support local scene.
Yes. Like, yes, 100%. That's exactly what it was.
So here's the thing though, at no point did they ever give anyone a chance. And the second you tried to engage with them at the top of the show, they were just trying to hit you back with like just insults and stuff, and you were playing along with them, but they really were just like not giving it a chance.
No, they sucked. They sucked for the most part.
So here's what I'm seeing though, is I'm seeing comic after comic walk off stage before I go up. Comics that I look up to and respect. I remember distinctly, like, just so miserable about how there's
just
so many people there for
sad
comedy.
Tom Myers come off stage. It's a lot. It's
I don't think he was on
witness.
That one. But honestly, well, here's the thing that like a lot of people don't know is most of the shows that are like this, there's no good audience. This show had a great audience, and the audience was having the show ruined for them as well by these people. And that's that's kind of what like really upset me. And watching Mike Quinlan, of all people, like one of the toughest comics I know, walk off stage and just kind of shake his head like, ooh, that didn't feel good.
Wow.
And like, that shook me. I was like, oh my God. So when I got up there, I did maybe two jokes. I'm watching half the audience talking and not looking. The other half are they're like smiling and doing that thing, but no sound is coming out. And I'm like, well, this is going to go nowhere. So I address the crowd. I say, I'm not even going to talk to the people who are ruining the show, but just so anybody else who isn't looking at them right now can see, it's seven dudes talking to one girl. They're all hitting on the same girl. And then I turn to them and I say, she's not going to fuck any of you. Stop ruining our night. And the people who were listening laughed and applauded.
Yeah.
So then the rest of the set, that group, they heard, and then the table next to them, who I guess was with them, heard, and they were kind of heckling me, and I was going back and forth. I'd do a joke for this side of the room. They would heckle. They were actually polite. They waited for my joke to finish.
Yeah.
Then they would heckle, and then I would hit them back.
Hold on. This is
and
our,
then do another
this is
joke.
Our spot to heckle. Come on. Damn it. Fuck this Navarro kid.
It really was pretty good. I did not mind the challenge. But afterwards, I get off stage and I'm walking back to where the comics are in the back, and I guess the drunkest of them, big middle-aged dude, comes up.
He got real aggressive.
Real aggressive.
Well, got up in your face right away.
He got up in some ladies' faces too, which I want to get to, because it's like he kept yelling. He was like, you need to apologize to that girl, the girl who was at the table. And he was like, she's crying. You made her cry. And I was like, I didn't, first off, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, you made her cry. And then all the comics started coming up because he was getting real in my face. And they, including Eric. And he backs up a little. And
as
just
I
like,
remember, this is how I remember this scene. I walked up and I could see this gentleman invading Eric's personal space. They're like kind of chest to chest at this point. And Eric goes, do you want me to apologize? And that's what I saw.
I did
and
laugh
that's how
a lot.
I came up. He was just like, fuck you. I'll get you fucking. I'm at the point because honestly, listen, I'm team comedian more than over this fucking jackass who's going to complain about the Eric's fucking crowd work over anything. Wasn't offensive in any way, shape, or form. But I believe
what he thought I said was
bit... So what you actually said was just like, guys, you're trying to hit on one girl that she's not going to fuck you. It says you were trying. You said we're going to rape this
Everyone
girl
in this bar is going to fuck that girl is what he. But here's the thing. I said what I said, which was not that. And he didn't, none of them responded.
Yes.
So they were all drunk as shit and must have word gotten around the game of telephone trying to figure out, well, what did he say to us? What did he say to us is my guess. But here's what made me really like confident to just like kind of laugh it off was he had six other guys with him. None of them joined him to come confront me, which means,
true.
And he was so unbelievably drunk that I just remember thinking like, and he kept going like, he kept saying something like, when the comics were like on my side, he kept going like, he's like, I spend so much money here. And I was like, wow, just a classic technique of douchebag. But so then
he pulls full customer service. Yeah. I need to speak to the manager about this.
The beauty of it. So this is the beauty of this is that like, so he keeps yelling, you don't be disrespectful to a woman. And in my head, because I did tell him, he goes, you made her cry. And I go, wait, did you tell her I said that? And he goes, yeah. And I go, well, then, buddy, you made her cry. I didn't make her cry. You're the one who made her cry. That didn't seem to make things better. At which point...
But it was true.
Wendy Townsend gets... Who I had not met up until this point. This
I need
is
to
how
mention that this burly man, he's got his cuff sleeves rolled up to the elbows right now. He's just looking for that reason. He's like, well, we're ready to fight. I'm ready to defend this woman's honor that doesn't need it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The whole time.
Well, he like... Yeah. He's... Oh, my God. Well, he like... He kept yelling... He disrespected a woman to me. He disrespected a woman and then says to Wendy something along the lines of like, you better get out of my face or I'll swing on you too or something. It was basically, he threatened a woman for defending me for whatever.
Hey, sometimes so when you're insane. Defending women, you got to punch a woman.
You want to make an omelet? Yeah. You got to crack some eggs. 2019.
I like that. God. He's just like, I'm such a feminist that I will punch a woman to defend a woman.
It was just on another level.
So
when he did that, because at that point Wendy had like kind of pushed me back and goes, just stand over there, I'll handle it.
So before we get to the end of your story, let me interject with some of this. So while this is all breaking down, I bring up the next comic. Next comic goes up. I go back to Andrew, the owner of the club, give him the skinny of what's happening. And Andrew has a real Sophie's Choice moment here because he's looking at it. He was just like, I know these people, they do come here every week and they do spend a lot of money. And he has this thing, he was just like, oh God, I need him. He's just like, I need him to keep coming to this bar every week. And at the same time, he has this moment where he's like, I am morally against what our patrons are doing. but I need our patrons.
And, I get it.
And at the same time, he's like thinking about it. He's like, but fuck that guy for fucking with a comic for a joke, right? Yep. Like, so he's having this Sophie's Choice dilemma where I came into the point, there was multiple points where I came up to the altercation and I was just like, I looked at, because I'm a big gentleman, and I stress the word gentle because I am a gentle, nimble giant. I don't like these type of situations, but I also look at myself as I was like, I am large enough to take this man by his waist, and I will move him out of the bar. Like, I'm not going to fuck this guy up, but I will remove him from this place if things get physical. So I have to go back to Andy. I have to tell him this because I don't want to carry this guy. I don't want a farmer's carry this guy over my shoulder for 50 yards out to the parking lot where I dump him and then say, you're free, right? Like, I don't want to do that. So he's having...
Really sweet.
So while that's going down, Wendy and you are talking. I get Andrew. Andrew finally gets involved. And then you have to meet Andrew. What happened from there?
So while I'm back in the office with Andrew, which I've done his open mic. He's seen me at his competitions, like whatever.
I can guarantee you, you might have seen him, but he didn't see you. He's not paying attention. I worked at that club for I'm not lying, 3 years, and he'd never seen my set.
Oh, wow.
He'd never watched it. In fact, the time where I was like, hey, watch my set, when Wits End just started, very good thing. You can find it in the archives here, but a very funny comedian, Jamel Johnson, very before I went up, he was the comic before me, blew out the PA. It was done. I had to go up a cappella, and Andrew didn't watch my set. He was just working on fixing the PA the whole time.
Okay, even case. So my point is, like, I did the finals of the comic of the year, and I'm like, oh, maybe he's not interested, whatever. And so while I was back there, he was like, look, he was supporting me, and he was like, I don't even know the story. He had heard what the other guy thought I said. He was like, I don't even care what was said. And so we're kind of sitting there awkwardly because he's like, wait here. We're going to have them finish up their drinks. He's like, apparently that one guy who started the fight, by the way, was with them, but he wasn't like part of the crew.
Oh, good.
So he was like a one-timer.
He was a piece of shit on top of it.
Yeah, he was a one. And that's why his friends who Andrew did know and was like, oh, they're good. That's why they didn't stand up to defend him, because he was like, oh, he's being a drunk asshole.
As if I need another reason to hate white people. God damn it.
Well, so while we're sitting there, Andrew's just kind of waiting. We're waiting for them to leave for me to come back to not escalate things. And while we're waiting, I go, hey, Andrew, do you want to just hear the story? It's actually kind of funny. And I told him the story and like how he like threatened a woman while defending women. And Andrew laughed. And then at that point I go, all right, I'm in a room with Andrew, elevator pitch time. I casually reference things like the hard times, the other clubs that I work for, the people he has open for him that work for my website. And all of a sudden he's like, hold on. He's looking at me, what are you doing? Whatever the date was, April 11th through the 14th. And I said, like, I'm working for you. And he goes, you didn't even look at your schedule. I go, I don't care what's on my schedule. If you're telling me I'm here, I'm here. And he was like, all right. And I think I sold it one more time as he was giving me the weekend. He goes, that's enough. I was like, all right, cool. But yeah, that's how.
So you got a weekend out of it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, good.
Pretty insane.
Look.
Yeah. Well, he also liked my they're not going to fuck. She's not going to fuck any of you. So watch the show.
So that's awesome, man. So it all worked out in your favor. And this horrible heckler drunkard who threatened a friend of ours, which we didn't defend. We're like, maybe she deserves it. I don't know. And then we go, you know what? Guess what? You got the weekend.
And you know what's really crazy about this? This is not my full story to tell. So I'm going to tell the button on this. Because Wendy had stepped in between. It turned out Wendy ended up talking to one of the people at that table, like a girl who Andrew knew, who was like, no, she's like the real ringleader.
Right.
Who was
right.
And she's awesome. She's not disrespectful. She's great. So not only did that woman send an email to Andrew saying, don't punish the comic, it wasn't his fault, but apparently through some weird circumstance, that woman knows somebody who books like a theater. And now Wendy's getting all their theater bookings of bigger, like, headlining comedians. So not only did I get a weekend out of it, but the person who stood up to defend me got a bunch of good stuff out of it, too.
Hell yeah.
It was
nice.
One of the craziest, like, that's the craziest comedy story I've been involved in. Like, that's wild.
I like the idea that guy, like, you realize that's that guy's pussy play, right? Like, he's like, I'm chivalry guy. Yeah. And he was just like, sweet. He found a situation that it almost works. He spun it. And he was just like, I'm going to show this guy that I'm not going to give fuck. I'm going to spin it on him. And it worked out in all the ways not in his favor, yeah. right? Yeah. Even the girl that he was trying to have sex with, it fucked him in the end. And I like that. I like it. You fucked him in more ways than one with that crowd work. And for that, God bless you.
Oh, my gosh.
God bless you.
Well, thanks for putting me on that show. Love it.
Let me go over just a couple of Joe Robinson's corrections.
Hey, Joe Robinson. Do you have any corrections for us this week?
Okay, Joe Robinson corrections.
Hot off the presses. Towards critters?
No, this would be our current episode, which is Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Okay.
But Part 1 of that.
Okay.
So Part 2 hasn't been released. It's not important. This is in regards to the first episode of Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. He goes to me, referring to me, you imply listeners, you imply, quote unquote, listeners infer. You suggest something to a listener by inferring it instead of implying it. So I
infer imply. Is it me that doesn't have a grasp of the English language?
No, that's me. I have the English language skills of a ninth grader. I'm not lying to you. It's fucking horrible. I'm not good.
No. Don't say that. I knew that difference between those words in ninth grade.
So.
I love that he's correcting you on English. That's awesome.
And he also mentioned it's at minute 52:30-ish. That's he wanted to throw that in there. He also said that that Bob Seger song is of course old time rock and roll. How iconic has something have to be for you to recall the name? So I'm not even sure what that's a correction for. Apparently, we were looking for a Bob Seger song.
Well,
old-time
I try to talk
roll.
To the kids that are under the age of 30. So,
and we also know. Refer
but actually,
to
probably haven't even seen Risky Business.
We also refer to quote unquote that game, and it equals the Super Bowl. Like we can't say the Super Bowl. So those were Joe Robinson's corrections for this week.
Well, how about you paying him?
Huh?
How much you paying him?
Nothing. He does this out of his own free will. Oh. He sends them to me whenever he listens to it. As it happens, he sends me live corrections.
And we make sure that we say everything because he actually is somebody in the entertainment field. So.
Yeah, I agree with
that.
Was
this the episode that you were unbelievably drunk during Nightmare 2?
No, that comes out. No, he hasn't listened to that one yet. That comes out next week.
Which one was that? That was part two?
That's part two. That's the one where we talk about your health. That's the next
episode.
That was
some good entertainment there.
That's going to be, by the way, it's already out now, but... Hard edit.
This is what happens when we don't have it.
Hard edit. I had trouble listening to me argue with my brother for...
This is what happens when we don't have a guest and we just start tearing at each other like dogs. It's awesome.
It was bad. It was bad. So
I'm
boys,
surprised you even edited it.
I went through, I edited out some things, like the thing where you called mom a bitch. I had to remove
that. Well,
that
should have been kept in.
But now that's in this episode.
That's
so
fine.
Eric,
do you imagine your kids growing up and starting a podcast like this where they fight with each other?
God, to the deep, more than anything in the world, Eric, what I hope is that my kids are just as successful and mediocre as myself.
I just hope they have supernatural godlike powers and actually destroy things when they get in fights, like entire buildings at a time.
My one kid poops her pants at 5 years old just because she forgets to go to the bathroom. So
she's busy. She's got stuff to do.
She is potty trained, and sometimes she just shits her pants. I poop my pants. I was like, what were you doing? She's like, I just forgot.
Look, she pulls out a schedule. She's like, look, it's jam-packed. I don't wait. Where would you shit?
Look at my schedule. Look, it is fucking to the T. I just didn't have time to poop
today. Exactly the same way because I hate it after I've held back the poo like at least 4 or 5 hours, then I finally poop myself. I'm like, damn, I should have like given in like the fourth or fifth time I was holding back. You know?
I'm sorry. Do you edge while pooping?
Like a prairie dog.
No, yeah. When you're edging, it's like jerking off, but you don't let yourself come, so you can keep jerking off.
Yeah.
No, it's always straight. It's always the straight same 30 seconds always.
I've always found that like ever since I hit about the age of 32, I don't have a choice when I poop. It happens now. It happens now. Every poop that I have is a rush to the bathroom. To like I'm holding on for dear life, and the second I sit down, it is explosion time.
Do you ever poop stand?
No, I don't.
Yeah, where it like splashes up on you? Absolutely.
No. The poop stand is where like you'll be in the middle of somewhere and you're like, I really got to poo. And I can only, all I can do is just stand here and hold it. Oh. And I'm not going anywhere. And I'm like, I can hold this.
As long as you don't move.
And yeah, so like give it a minute or two.
Okay.
And like,
I'm on board.
Yeah, okay, I can start moving again.
I used to have, when I lived down in Maryland, I would drive from like just south of Baltimore to just north of D.C. and back every day during rush hour. So my mornings were just a gamble. If I didn't shit before I left the house, I would have about an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. And I had a good like 5 minute walk from the parking garage to work. I recall doing that. So it was more of a poop sit. I'd be sitting in my car for about 5 straight minutes like... It's not getting any better, but the second I get up, I got to go, or there's some close calls.
I hate to say there's been, the worst time was when I had to drive all the way down to Tyson's from Baltimore, which is a good 2 hours, and of course, I was wearing my shorts, and I'd had plenty of coffee that morning, and oh, it was ready to go, and I was like, as soon as I got up, shit, like the fucking, like the mountain just exploded, and I'm like, oh gosh, I know this is gonna be everywhere. I don't want people to see the back of my pants because it's probably a stain a mile wide. And then I was like, just driving somewhere so I could buy new pants for the day. I'm like, oh gosh.
I've That's shit my myself on the way to work before and had to go to Walmart to buy new pants. Yeah. That is a thing.
That would be a Walmart commercial. Yeah. I was literally thinking, who is commercial with that? It's Walmart.
And the worst thing is, like, you're wearing camo pants, and it's like, no, I still don't want people to even see camo with shit on it. So
they can't see you, but they can see your shame.
I'm wondering what kind of pants you could wear so it doesn't look like you've actually shit your pants. That could be a selling promo.
Your brown camo.
All right, so tonight... We are going over the 2003 classic, Freddy versus Jason, the mashup that I think we waited for, I waited for my entire life, and then when it finally dropped, it was here, I was excited. I remember seeing this in the theaters, oddly enough. It was during... I find that horror goes through... It's not a 10-year boom. It usually is like the beginning of every decade, it comes back, okay? Right now, we're at the top of a bell curve again. The horror is really good again. And it starts off the decade, and then it kind of drops off as it goes through. So we're only at what? This was 2003. It was near the bell curve end. I think at this time, because in the 90s we had some fucking really good movies. We had some new Halloweens. We had at least one Freddy movie that was added into the mall. I feel like this was a downward tick. I don't know.
I was so whole much holding my breath to see that. That Freddy versus Saw versus Predator movie, but it never came to fruition.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
So this movie's directed by Ronnie Yu. Are you familiar with Ronnie Yu?
He sounds like a Japanese person.
He was. Well, before he did
this, it's a rap name.
He's known for multiple kung fu movies before he directed this film. But he had directed another horror film before this. Bride of Chucky in 1998.
Ah,
so this was his second foray into it. And they actually did ask Rob Zombie to take this project on, but instead he was working on a little project called House of a Thousand Corpses, which is sequel would spawn The Devil's Rejects, of course, which is, I would say, one of my favorite horror movies that existed. So good for Rob Zombie not taking on this project.
Didn't really like House of a Thousand Corpses, but after Devil's Rejects, I liked it better.
That is true, because I feel the exact same way. The first time I watched it, I was like, this is ridiculous. There's some redeemable qualities about it, but I didn't love it. And then I went back after seeing Devil's Rejects, and I fucking really love House of a Thousand Corpses. It is like, it's like the prequel I never knew I needed before I saw Devil's Rejects. Now, this movie starts off really fast. Now, you'll notice things throughout this movie. A couple things that need to be mentioned. One, they didn't use Kane Hodder for this film. Kane Hodder was the gentleman they used in the previous two Jason Friday the 13th movies, who I think is one of my favorite people that have played Jason, because he just looks like a Hulk. Like, he just looks thick and unstoppable.
Damn, Jason, you thick. Yeah.
He had them thighs that made me believe that he could kill me.
He pantomimes and better than any other pantomime.
The guy that they picked for this one was Ken Kurzinger, who they picked him purely based on his height. They picked him because he was 6 foot, I think like 6 foot four or 6 foot seven. So he's a tall, like, basketball player tall. And that was just to accentuate the David versus Goliath thing by seeing Robert Englund, who's 5'10", versus this fucking mammoth of a man. Kane Hodder's only 6'2". While my favorite Jason, he plays up the Jason card a little bit too much. I get it. It's your only work that you have in Hollywood. You need to hold on to that. But he holds this grudge against the movie. And I'm like, dude, I get that they didn't pick you, but calm the fuck down. Like, find another job other than BTK, which is a horrible movie that Kane Hodder plays BTK in. You know, it's just... And
it's no Wishkeeper, I'll tell you that.
I will tell you...
Wishmaster.
I would have liked a Kane Hodder in this movie over the gentleman they picked for this, because I just feel like he looks just like a tall dude that's really strong, but I'm like, I don't equate tallness with strength. I equate it with a lot of other things, like reach, the ability to bounce, to shoot a jump shot over me. These are things that I equate with height. I don't necessarily...
You keep saying basketball, but he's clearly a white actor. He's a tight end. Let's get that very clear.
I equate it with a blocking ability next to the left tackle. Like, those are things that I equate that
12-yard touchdowns,
with.
Jason Voorhees.
Exactly. So
Jason Witten Voorhees.
I wouldn't have been pulled out of this horrible script if I had seen Kane Hodder in it. So, the movie starts off, though, really quick as Freddy goes ahead and gives the backstory.
My children. From the very beginning, it was the children who gave me my power. The Springwood Slasher. That's what they called me. My reign of terror was legendary. Dozens of children would fall by my blades. Then the parents of Springwood came for me.
And while this is all going on, they shoot clips from Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street 1 through 6.
When I was alive, I might have been a little naughty. But after they killed me, I became something much, much worse. The stuff nightmares are made of. The children still feared me. And their fear gave me the power to invade their dreams. And that's when the fun really began.
I wish they had added in Carolyn, what's her name, from Texas. They live on fear!
They figured out a way to forget about me. To erase me completely. Being dead wasn't a problem, but being forgotten, now that's a bitch! I can't come back if nobody remembers me! I can't come back if nobody's afraid! I had to search the bowels of hell. But I found someone. Someone who'll make them remember. He may get the blood, but I'll get the glory. And that fear... here's my ticket home.
bike?
Whoa.
You know what this led to, right?
What did that lead to?
This led to Freddy Krueger's first singing album called Unforgettable.
I'm not familiar with it.
Unforgettable.
I'm so unforgettable.
Just say my name so I can eat more children. I just love the rules of demonology that if you say a demon's name, of course, that's their way into the world and everything, much like the Candyman when you say it in the mirror how many times, which I think the young ones made fun of the best with the two demons. It's like, well, my name is Fatoomsh. Nobody ever says Fatoomsh. It's like, the best thing is, at least your name is something that somebody will actually say, like Orgo. Like, why don't we go to the store or go to the shops? At least somebody will actually say your name. So, just kind
good
of ridiculous.
Young ones reference. Yeah. Appreciate
with
that.
With David Rappaport as the midget. So.
So, as that scene ends, it zooms in on the eye of Jason's mask, and we are taken dockside to Camp Crystal Lake, where we see a young co-ed getting ready to skinny dip.
Pretty sure this is the only thing I remembered of this movie after all this time was those titties.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 3 minutes in, you get titty shots. Well, so you already know it's a quality film.
It's a complicated scene. I had to watch it three times before I got through it. It's very complicated. Artistic.
So, she can't find her boyfriend, and they're playing on all the classic Friday the 13th tropes here. A boyfriend who's missing, a girl who goes skinny dipping, sex at a fucking lake. Of course, she runs into the infamous killer, Jason, and does all of the classic slasher shit. Running, screaming, falling, thinking that she's safe, and then accidentally finding the boyfriend's dead body until Jason comes out of nowhere and fucking pins her to a tree with a machete. But as she's pinned to the tree, our old friend Freddy starts to play some mind games on Jason Voorhees.
Jason. I should have been watching them, not drinking boy at the lake.
I deserve to be punished.
We all deserve to be punished.
Jason, my special, special boy. Do you know what your gift is? No matter what they do to you, you cannot die. You can never die. You've just been sleeping, honey. But now, the time has come to wake up. Mommy has something she wants you to do. I need you to go to Elm Street. The children have been very bad on Elm Street. Rise up, Jason! Your work isn't finished! Hear my voice and live again!
Rising up, back from the dead. Did my time.
Make them remember me, Jason.
At Crystal Lake.
Make them remember what fear tastes like.
Oh, Ma.
I've been away from my children for far too long.
And we finally get the intro credits here, which turn into a nu metal dream at the end. If you're not into nu metal, you're not ready for Freddy versus Jason.
I hate to say the retard strength really bothers me through this, and the fact that he can push a machete through an entire tree when stabbing somebody. And I kind of wish that Mythbusters would do the Jason things where he actually does superhuman feats of like a machete through a tree. It's like how much pound force would you actually do to actually put a machete through a tree?
I mean, it's not easy. Should we go try it? Should we Mythbusters this thing?
It's absolutely impossible. I think you have to like to fire it at like 100,000 feet per second or something.
Well, that's how strong the undead body of Jason Voorhees is. I mean, don't hate.
It just takes me out of the film. I mean, everything else is
real.
Oh,
that was it. That was it. That was the thing. They were like, I don't believe this.
Now, I had before watching this film, and it is a film. I had never watched a single Freddy movie or a single Jason movie.
Okay.
So this is my baseline for this. So tonally, are the characters, is the I guess the aesthetics of the film, like how much of this is a mashup, or like how I'm when I heard the new metal, I was like, how much of this is just them repackaging two characters for a new audience, and how much of it stays true to the actual tones of the originals?
So far, if I were to say tonally how this comes in, it's very much a Freddy-driven movie that Jason is involved in. That's what it feels like more. Okay. Because, Freddy is a charismatic Joker-esque character. And Robert Englund does a magical job bringing the Freddy Krueger character to life. But... it's pretty much a Nightmare on Elm Street, but Jason's in it. It's what it feels like more than anything, which makes sense because it's also a Dimensions film. Dimension owns the rights to Freddy. They got the rights from Paramount to do Friday the 13th films, so it makes sense that it is heavily relies on Robert Englund's character.
Oh, and another thing is you see in the close-ups of Freddy's face, in his mask is so different that he looks more demon-esque in this one.
He does. You know, I was reading up on this, and they said that the makeup was so thick for Robert Englund's Freddy mask in this one that he was doing lots of scenes with fire, and that when he came off, he couldn't feel how hot the fire was, and he couldn't, like, the mask had welded to his face at the end of certain shoots where he had to just, like, literally, like, scrape it off of his face to get it off. So, just a little fun tidbit.
Yeah, usually he looks a bit more human and just burnt, but this one I think they almost made his face almost look like a dragon sometimes.
So next we're transported to 1428 Elm Street, the classic Nightmare on Elm Street house where we see in part ones and two. We get to see three girlfriends playing Mary, Fuck, and Kill.
Your choices are the Three Stooges. Go, Kia.
Oh, God.
A girl named after a car.
Which one had the super bad toupee here?
Harry.
Mary. No. It was Mo.
Yeah.
Either one, I kill him.
Okay, well, who'd you fuck then?
This is stupid, y'all.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God, whatever. Look, I fuck the ball guy and I marry Larry. Jesus, is this what we're doing all night? Because, y'all, this is really stank.
So these three heroines are played by our lead scream queen, Laurie Campbell, who's playing Monica Kina, who's playing Laurie Campbell. The other girl who's playing Gibb, Catherine Isabella. And then our third, who is Destiny Child's own, Kelly Rowland, who has been multiple times asked about this film, and she always just plays it off. She's like interviewers try to corner her with this movie, and she goes, he's like, it was a box office success. What do you want from me? I mean, it was the best movie.
It's no Leatherface Part 3 or 4, so.
She wasn't great in this movie, and we'll get to that as
so
we...
Can you just ask me what it was like to hang out with Beyonce again? Yeah, I'd rather answer that.
Are we right upon the introduction of Jason to the scene?
We're getting close. Now Kia mentions that she needs to get a nose job. The lights flicker, and they decide to get some candles. There's a ring at the doorbell, and it's the boys.
Oh, babe. Tell you about kissing me after you smoked, huh?
Lighten up, they're menthols.
So this guy,
I love that line.
This guy who comes in is such a cock. I love him to death in this movie. He's like, don't make me ask you twice, babe. Let's go up to Fucktown. What's the deal? Like, he's just the definition of 2019's fuckboy is this guy. Very solid role for him. So this boyfriend to Gibb, as well as another guy, Blake, come in to the mix. Kia and Lori have a brief discussion how she's not over her 14-year-old fling, which is weird because they're both 28 years old. Clearly, like, tits don't grow on a 14-year-old that this heroine has, which, listen... I watched her acting skills. She got chosen for her tits. Like, there's no way around this. She had huge boobs and got picked as the lead actress in this movie. But it hasn't... her boyfriend hasn't called or written since he left. Blake, the other guy, is there trying to hook up with Lori. Kia is trying to push this, so she's a cock enthusiast for Blake, which is odd. Like, very not like anything I've ever seen in the female community, is a pro-cock woman. But she's really pushing for this guy, Blake, to get up in them drawls. The douche calls up the other chick and says, don't make me ask twice. Blake goes to get them the remaining girls some beers, but finds the back door open. There's some tension, but no kill. Now, meanwhile, upstairs, the two are now post coitist when all of a sudden Jason enters the fray. And comes over to the bed and stabs him like a half dozen times. The girl is in the other room. The girl is in the other room taking a shower, and as he finishes stabbing this guy, like impaling him through the bed multiple times, he takes the bed and folds it up like a fucking taco, like seeing his head and fucking legs like
touch like
this. It's
one of those Craftsmatics gone bad.
Yeah, it's a real, it's the it's the worst Craftsmatic.
It's otherwise known as O.J. Simpson's bed from Naked Gun. So. When Frank starts playing with it.
So she hears the commotion that's going on outside and turns off the shower and decides to go investigate. She sees a huge pile of blood that's like coming underneath the door jamb.
Wait a second. This isn't my blood.
What are you doing?
And she goes to open the door when all of a sudden she sees her boy turned into goddamn Del Taco in the other room. She runs out screaming. They find a police officer, luckily, who just happens to be rolling by. And we get this.
You kids need some assistance?
What the fuck do you think?
What the fuck do you think?
Can you cue the music on this one?
Yeah. I can cue the music on that one, Jeremy.
Okay, the whole problem with this thing is, number one, Springwood, Ohio is where the Elm Street house is supposed to be. And of course, the real life Lake Okeechokee Bokey, whatever, otherwise known as Camp Crystal Lake, somewhere in New Jersey. So from the moment that Mrs. Voorhees tells her son, okay, go meet up with Elm Street, at least a 9-hour drive. So
did he walk? How did he go,
so,
Jeremy?
Yeah, so,
how do you think
so, yeah,
he got
is
there?
Is Jason walking, or is like in this scene he's maybe like riding a bus? You know, like gotta get to Elm Street. You know, he can't talk. He doesn't have money.
You think
he kill the bus driver and drive himself?
You think he's 8-miling it? He's just like planning his kills. He's just got a hoodie on. So.
I hope nobody recognizes me.
I better do something with this murder shit right now.
Hey, sir, you got your ticket.
I like the idea of a hitchhiking Jason Voorhees. But, Jeremy, I think you're missing a very important part. Jason is clearly a supernatural character who can't die.
Oh, so maybe he just reforms in the yard of the Elm Street
house. He just gets hit by cars all the way to Ohio.
Yeah, but every scene that you watch him, he's in one scene, and then they run, and then all of a sudden, he's now in front of him. Maybe he has a teleport power, because you never see him moving fast, so maybe he teleported there.
You know, I could buy the whole Jason in New York, because at least New York is close to Jersey, not Ohio, you know.
You don't know if he wasn't honeymooning. What if he was just there since that, you know, Jason Goes to Hell actually happened before, technically. He was in New York. This whole time he wakes up, oh my god, now I gotta go kill these kids in Jersey.
When in New York,
like a quantum leap thing.
Yeah,
he shows up until he murders the right person, then he goes somewhere else. Nice.
Iggy says the chances of you killing in this stage are pretty good this week.
Jason, that the police come, they check it out, and they're already trying to cover up this murder, thinking that it's Freddy Krueger. They take the kids down to the station. Lori talks to the new cop for answers, but he's just moved there and he's not very helpful, and he's kept in the dark about the whole Freddy situation. Lori wants to know why they keep asking her about her dreams. What was the name? She goes, what was the name? He entered the, and then we enter the dream sequence at the police station.
Can I mention that, of course, she thought they were very strange questions from the cops, and then they were asking her questions like, have you been hearing any songs by Dawkins lately? or maybe the Fat Boys.
Yes, wait a minute. Dream Warrior? Are you talking about the Will Smith classic Nightmare on My Street? Yes, of course I've been listening to that.
Well, no, but I do hear parents just don't understand a lot in my head. So,
while she's doing this, she slightly dozes off, and we enter a dream sequence for Lori within the police station. She walks down a hallway. There's some cool-ass flyers of missing peoples that all kind of watch her as she goes by, which is kind of cool. And then we hear this.
His name is
Small
Freddy
girl
Krueger,
in the corner.
And he loves children, especially little girls.
Not like Michael Jackson.
I prefer another person that meets the little girl and he tries to play it off to like something a little bit of blood under the eyes, maybe you can take care of that little girl.
Oh gosh, Lapierre, your eyes are gouged out, lady.
Just play it off like you don't really notice, but it's just like a little something there. So.
He's coming back. Soon he'll be strong enough. It's okay to be afraid. We're all afraid. We're your friends. We're everyone.
By the way, every time I've done acid twice in my life, and both times when somebody said they were my friends, that was the voice I
heard. It's everything is bar.
As I watched the room melt around me. This is terrifying. What a horrible drug. All of a sudden, the walls reach out around her, and she's transported back to good old 1428 Elm Street, where we get to hear the iconic Freddy rhyme.
And Dream Warriors.
7, 8, better turn into a ninja lady.
8, gonna sleep
9, 10,
no
Yo Fed Coda's not gonna save you again. So.
Or Chris Watson, no matter.
Oh, and Freddy scares her at the last second, and she wakes up. So, next, we see Blake's dad, who, if you haven't watched this movie, by the way, available on Netflix. You can watch it right now if you want to, if you're a Netflix subscriber. Blake, the guy who is the guy who didn't get fucked at the party, his dad comes out, looks exactly like Alex Jones. I can't stress how much this guy looks like. Great, very real news person, Alexander P. Jones.
When he hears about Freddy, he's like, are you sure they weren't lizard people?
Yeah. Why were you not looking for the lizard people trying to get girls?
Is this why he's so out of his mind? Yes. He saw this shit. He's like, oh my God, what else don't I know?
They stole my soul, and now I'm in movies that I didn't even know I was in.
So as Blake's dad comes over, he's not mad about it. He's mad about the situation. He walks back inside, and Blake mumbles to himself that he's like, if I ever meet this Freddy guy, I'm going to kill him myself. But it appears that he has dozed off. So Freddy comes in front of him, and he's like using this weird shadow.
Not strong enough yet. Well, I will be soon enough.
And Freddy realizes that he's not strong enough. The kids don't fear him enough, so his shadow can't cut him. But when Blake wakes up, he's in for a world of trouble. He wakes up, he looks next to him, his dad's sitting next to him, and his dad head falls off. Jason's right next to him and fucking chops him in the face right after that. So, good old Jason Voorhees. Freddy's plan is working out pretty nicely.
Is it, though?
Is it? I don't know.
Isn't his thing to inspire fear so he can come back and do it? But if because the whole thing is, I don't want to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. So then he reminds this guy and then immediately has Jason kill him.
Yeah, yeah. So Jason is going around killing people on Freddy's behalf. But because Freddy is such a local town here, it's kind of like this. Like, if somebody came around and was winning baseball games for the Orioles, you understand? Even if it wasn't the actual guy, we would immediately be back behind the Orioles. It wouldn't matter. And the Orange Pride would come flowing
through
the city.
So he just needs fear everywhere. Yes, yes. Red Pride.
Think of him like
flowing.
A horrible GM. Like Peter, think of him as Peter Angelos. That's the best way that I can
describe. Who that is,
him.
But I'm going to believe that's a funny baseball reference.
That's the owner of the Orioles. Who we would forgive Peter Angelos and think he's awesome if the Orioles were actually good. So,
yeah. So I'm a Cubs fan. I can't comment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are good now, so yeah. That's kind of cool. Must be nice.
It is. It's really nice. I wish you knew what it felt like.
I didn't. Well,
it hasn't been
100
years since the Orioles have been that bad. But hey, they're
right, yeah.
So we were actually good 40 years ago.
I don't know, guys. I think we're not at the halfway point, but we're at the hour mark right now. Eric, where can people find you? Where can we find stuff about you? How can we? How can people look you up?
All right. Well, the big thing is The Hard Times, thehardtimes.net. Just Google The Hard Times. Find us at Real Punk News on Instagram, on Twitter. You can also find our hard drive section, which is our video game section. Oh, by the way, if you don't know what The Hard Times is, we are a music and alternative culture and punk, metal, whatever, satire site. So
yeah, it's kind of like The Onion, but like think of Rolling Stone magazine, but The Onion version of it, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's exactly how I describe it.
Yeah, and it's also for people who really just are in that world, like guys like you two, musicians who know what it's like. Oh, awesome.
I fucking love it.
Well, so what we're doing, so you can find my work there. I'm a managing editor. It's great stuff at The Hard Times. I love it. Mm-hmm. And I have a podcast that's coming out in the next 2 weeks on the network called The Pitch Group, where I talk to other writers and editors for The Hard Times, and we talk about the behind the scenes of The Hard Times and a lot of the lore of like our pitch group, which has started to get a lot of notoriety because it's a Facebook group that's closed of 400 comedy writers, and it's got its whole culture, and it's divided up into sections. It's this really cool thing that I'm highlighting. Just the lore of The Hard Times and the writers who write for it. You can also find me. You can just Google my name, Eric Navarro. I fortunately, it's been a couple years of hard work, but I have beat out on the front page of Google. Mm-hmm. I have beat out the war veteran hero, the famous author, the teen who died, and the Spanish director. All those Eric Navarros.
You're number one, Eric Navarro.
The
now.
Fuck out.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. For my dick jokes.
Hell
so
yeah.
Just Google Eric Navarro. It's also because I fucked up all my social media. They're all different names. But just find me, friend me, whatever. Everything's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, check that. And he's going to be on next week's episode. And you can find all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. That's run by Kimberly Callahan and Michael Quinlan. We also have a new room coming out in June, so you should check that out. All that shit will be on ericcomedy.com. By the way, whatever player you're listening to us on right now, go ahead and drop us a 5-star rating. We'll read it on the show. That's super exciting. I don't know. Fucking buy a murder mystery ticket. Do your job. Jeremy, take us out.
How will they know if they don't fear me and know my name?
People fear you, Jeremy. 100%. There's no way.
And I know your name, Johnny. I know.